Realty Nation. It's your host, Avi Golhar. Welcome to the Think Realty Podcast. Today's show is special. We're talking with someone that I've seen present on real estate data only once. And I wish I had seen him present on real estate data analytics, his findings on the market many years ago, and for like multiple times over. Because if I think, like, if I had just been in that room, oh my gosh, like it would have changed the way that I invested and I currently invest in real estate. He's known for understanding and doing deep research into real estate data to make the right investments for his family office and for anything that he sees. He understands technology. He and his family understand technology, lending, and many, many, many other things. So that being said, I'm going to introduce Dave in just a second. But before I do that, this episode is brought to you by the Think Realty Hybrid Conference and Expo in Houston, March 26th to the 27th. You see how I did that? Yeah, I had to slide that in there. Set your sights on making 2021 a success with more knowledge and know-how by learning and networking with top-tier investing pros. For a limited time, get a buy one, get one deal on your tickets, both live and virtual. You can register for two tickets and enter the code PODCAST at checkout to receive the special pricing. Visit thinkrealty.com/Houston for more information. Okay, so I wish I had a data brain like Dave Steck does. And if I did, I would probably be as good looking as Dave Steck is. And if I did that, then I think the entire world would be open to me. But neither of these things are true, which is why I need to make sure I had Dave on the show. So Dave, welcome to the show.
Avi, I appreciate it, and thanks for inviting me.
You got it. So before the show, we were catching up on your bio and background, and holy cow, mind blown. Give us a little intro, give us a little background on who you are, what you do. Keep it to a minute if you can.
Sure. Well, I don't even know that I can fill up a minute, but I'll simply say, you know, I grew up in a trailer park for the first 20% of my life, and I had two eighth grade education parents and 60 cousins, and I was the only one to go to college. So I feel pretty grateful. But my philosophy is to be grateful, but not content. There's an awful lot of opportunity out there. And our background and where we capitalize on opportunity is in real estate, in private lending, and in early stage technology, primarily disruptive technology as it relates to real estate and private lending. I happen to have two sons. And Josh and Blake are part of our family office. One of them created a billion-dollar private lending company in 4 years at the age of 27, along with three of his founding partners. And my other son is actually relocating here to Puerto Rico, where I live. And we're excited about being able to live on the ocean and pay a 4% corporate tax. So that's about as much as you probably need to hear, Robbie.
Yeah, I'm going to at some point join you guys in Puerto Rico on that 4% of corporate tax. I think that's a phenomenal strategy, for sure. So you've done a lot of research. You've presented at Harvard. You've done all of these things. And before we get into the weeds of some of the questions that I have for you, for the new investors that are watching and that are hearing this, if there's one gold nugget, and I always like starting the show with just the one gold nugget for a new investor, what would that be?
Oh boy. You know, that wasn't something that I had anticipated that you'd ask me, but I can tell you exactly what the answer is. Timing. There's no more important word in real estate than timing. Everyone else tells you cash flow or appreciation or who knows what. But at the end of the day, the single most important word in real estate or private lending or technology is timing. And oh, by the way, it's the most important word in life. Because there are really five things in real estate that you've got to figure out: the where, the when, the what, the who, and the how. And the single most important one of those is the when. And the second most important is the where. Well, we've made a fortune knowing when and where out of 405 markets in the US to be able to capitalize at any point in the market cycle. And so timing is the single most important word. And if I had one nugget, that's the one.
Timing. Holy cow. we were talking before the show, and you said you had done a presentation at Harvard, and you had predicted this crash, and they're like, get out of here. And then the crash happened, then they invited you back. How do you know, and I don't think this is in my questions for you, but just right off the top of my head, I've got so many. What do you look at? Like, there's so many points of data to look at. How do you know where to go to first?
Yeah, it's a great question with a way long answer. Because as you know, if you're trying to determine what's going on in the economy, you have to look at economic data. And if you're trying to look at what's going to happen in real estate, you've got to look at housing data or whatever other data may exist in commercial, industrial, and residential, the three sectors within real estate. Well, it's not simple to do that. And people always say, well, how can I do what you're doing? And I tell them, don't try. If somebody else were doing what we were doing, I wouldn't do it. I'd just get the information from them. But we find ourselves in this position of doing it, not to try to help others necessarily, but to make sure we don't make mistakes. And so we've spent a fortune, and we do every month, collecting data, processing it to figure out exactly what's coming next. That's all we want to solve for. We already know what's happened in the past. The question is, what's going to happen next? And ask yourself this question. Think about the last 12 months in the real estate world or even in the economy. Did anyone see that coming? No. So I couldn't have seen the last 12 months coming, but in 2019, I predicted a recession. And it was because there were so many things that were part of what I call the house of cards that any one of those could have tipped the house of cards over. It just happened to be COVID. So it's not a simple answer. I wish it were. It's a long answer. And that's why, from a competitive standpoint, research is our competitive advantage. It allows us to make money when other people don't and save money when other people lose.
So what do you see right now as the best real estate sector at this time in the market cycle? I think that's something interesting, right? Because like I look at single family, multifamily, commercial, industrial. What are you seeing out there?
Yeah, it's a great question. Well, let's just kind of walk through it together.
Sure.
So there's three sectors. There's commercial, there's industrial, and there's residential. So let's take industrial. What fits in industrial? Well, it's basically plants and factories and warehouses. Well, plants and factories have had a heck of a year with COVID. And oh, by the way, warehouses haven't done very well either, unless they happen to have all online clients. But those who had offline clients have been crushed. So now let's look at commercial. Well, you tell me, how you feeling about shopping malls or retail or office or hotel? I mean, office was one of the darlings, and now everybody is doing stay at home. And self-storage is not bad, but what's going to happen when someone has to make their mortgage payment over a decision around making their self-storage payment? So foreclosures only happen when forbearance gets to the point next year where it could potentially be an issue. So then you look at residential and you say, well, there's multifamily and there's single family. Well, multifamily, we're not bullish at all about, because multifamily has been on a tear. And it's right now where all of the big money is going, because people are concerned about shopping malls and hotels and office and retail. And so money's going there, but it shouldn't be, because it's overbuilt, over-permitted. And we believe that there's going to be a reversal of the fortune that apartments and multifamily have enjoyed over the last many years. So we're focused on the best risk-adjusted strategy and sector or subsector in real estate. Single family. Think flipping, think wholesaling, think lending to flippers. We believe that short term is the best thing during uncertain times. And this has still got a lot of uncertainty associated with it in the future.
What do you think about, so in the single family side, love the fix and flip model, love the long-term rental model. What do you think about build to rent? Is that something that you still see as a little risky, or is that still in the bucket of semi-okay, not as risky, and maybe it's something that I should do?
I think build to rent is a great sector right now. And it's the sector that the institutional firms like Blackstone and others are coming back into because they see the opportunity in single family, just like we do. But they feel as though there's an opportunity to really capitalize in a big way, sort of build to rent communities. Now, build to rent communities make me nervous because as an investor, I personally won't invest in any community that has higher than 20% rentals because the people who own those properties are investors. And if for any reason investors need to sell, they'll dump the property. Whereas if it's created around a community of homeowners, it takes a lot longer for decisions to potentially adversely impact you. But I do believe build for rent is a great space. And so it is one of the areas within single family that we like, and we have invested a fair amount of money in rentals through other folks who have funds that we believe in, who are as good at what they do as we are at what we do.
So the strategy that you're deploying within residential, so you like residential, within residential, the one of the strategies that you're deploying then, from what I'm understanding, is lending. Are there any other strategies, or in addition to lending, any other strategies that you're finding to be the best bang for your buck, the best ROI for your funds?
Sure, great question. Well, remember, we're a family office, and I have two sons and myself. And one of my sons is the founder, co-founder and CEO of a little company called Sunday, SUNDAE.com. Sunday like the cherry on the top, not the day of the week. Anyway, he co-founded a company a couple of years ago with the former CFO of Airbnb, and they have been on a tear. What have they been doing? Flipping, wholesaling, and lending. The three things that we as a family like. So he's focused largely on that side, and I'm focused largely on the lending side. So we do, as a family, more from a lending standpoint than he does as a company in the real estate space. But he's created a marketplace for people to transact. So flippers can go there and look at properties that are available to be wholesaled. So it's an integration of technology into real estate, like we've integrated technology in private lending. But my favorite one is always going to be private lending. Why? Because if you think about the six F's of real estate, the six F's are you got to find it, you got to figure it, you got to fund it, you got to fix it, you got to fill it, and you got to flip it. Well, those six F's all take a different skill set. You know, if you're going to find it, you've got to market. If you've got to figure it, you need to have some finance background. If you're going to fund it, you need to raise money. If you've got to fix it, you need to be, you know, you have to swing a hammer. You have to know a contractor. If you fill it, you need to have a property management background. And if you flip it, you need to have some sales experience. Six of those competencies make it very difficult for flippers. And that's why a very small percentage of flippers actually succeed. By contrast, a lender, private lender, a hard money lender, only has to fund a deal. So they only have to have one skill set, and they work with people who do all the rest of the work. And I love the model where I basically get to cheat off others, right? Yep. Where they do all the work and I write the check and get a bigger one back. So from an effort to return ratio standpoint, it's much better to be a lender than a flipper. From a risk mitigation standpoint, you're at the good end of the capital stack, as you understand, and everyone does probably listening to the show. So we have less risk, we do less work, and we have a better effort to return than anyone else in real estate.
So what would you say would be some of the best ways to get into private lending? Because you have a lot of folks that, you know, they don't want to flip. They don't want to jump into that space, kind of like me, right? Like, honestly, I'm 5'5" and 130 pounds wet. Like, I know what a sledgehammer looks like. There's no way I'm going to pick it up. I just can't do that, just hard labor. It's not in my, I'm too pretty for it, really. You and I are cut from the same cloth when it comes to that perspective. How do you get into private lending? What are some of the things that you need to know to set it up right so that you can enjoy a future where you're growing your money and you're making money, you're putting it over here into your private lending bucket?
Sure. Well, I would say that there are three things that you need to vet in order to make a conscious and informed decision about doing a deal. One, you got to vet the market. You know, what market are you going to lend in? Number two, you've got to vet the borrower. Who are you going to loan the money to? And number three, you got to vet the deal. Do the numbers make any sense at all anyway? Well, we have a workshop called Just Be the Bank. In fact, I think the URL is justbethebank.com. And you literally can go there and sign up and get a little bit of background and maybe even look at some of our modules on how to vet both the deal, the borrower, and the market. Because at the end of the day, if you can do that, then you have three other options. You can either loan your own money, you can broker deals to others, or you can put together a fund and do more deals than you ever could on your own by working with other people who want to write a check and have you do their work. So that's what we put together. That's what my son and I have done as he was one of the co-founders of that big company that you mentioned. And that's what has really helped our family just add a zero.
That's incredible. I like that. Just add a zero. I think there are a lot of investors out there, especially those that are watching, that could really just level up from a mindset perspective, right? Let's add a zero, and that's where it starts. And I think that's really neat. So
let me just comment on that, because I think your listeners will probably appreciate this. But sure. I would tell folks, I own justaddazero.com. And if you went there, you'd see nothing, because I've never built it out. But I just love the notion that, look, Abhi, I don't know what your net worth or your income is, but if I were able to help you add a zero, would you put me on your Christmas card list forever? Now, I just use that expression because the truth is that's what we should all be looking to do. No matter what our income is, no matter what our net worth is, why don't we just add a zero? And oh, by the way, when you get there, add another zero. That ought to be people's focus. It shouldn't be trying to get rich by tomorrow at 4 o'clock with some get rich quick scheme. Yeah. It ought to be adding a zero and putting together a strategy to get there. So I'm sorry, I interrupted you. I thought that might be helpful.
Totally fine. Last question for you. I know you're super busy and all these things, and you've got so many other calls. So I certainly appreciate the time today. From a private lending perspective, and I know that's a really big pillar for your family, your family office's investing strategy. What's a deal that you can share, if you're open to sharing, that would really wow some of the folks that are listening to really get like through their head that private lending is something that you could, it's a very viable option. It's a very viable strategy that they should deploy.
Well, here's the best one I can come up with. I don't know if folks listening have ever heard of a wrap loan, W-R-A-P. But doing a wrap loan allows two people to work together. One who doesn't have as much money as the other person. And so they sort of bring somebody else in who's got more money. Well, my other son, Blake, actually did a loan with my grandson, Carter. Blake's in his 30s and Carter is 3. And we put together, for the purposes of legacy, because we wanted to plant the seed of self-reliance and wealth in my grandsons, we set up a Roth self-directed IRA. Mm-hmm. Now, in order to do that, they had to have enough earned income. So Carter is under a modeling agreement with our company so that I can show people his photo. And he's a model for our company and we're able to pay him. So now he was able to take that earned income, use it to open up a self-directed Roth IRA, partner with his uncle, and literally do his first private lending deal in 2020 on a $56,000 loan. It was a property in Indiana. It was a light to no rehab deal. And they got 13 points and 2% interest. I'm sorry, rephrase that. 2 points and 13% interest. And it turns out that the cool part is the way that they structured it as a wrap loan.
Yeah.
My son, who's his uncle, ended up getting a return between 10 and 11%. And Carter's return on his very first private lending deal was 97% on an annualized basis.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Wow.
And so that's my best story for you as it relates to, and it's the most recent one, where you can take a little and turn it into a lot by understanding what private lending is and the power of it. Because at the end of the day, you just want to be the bank.
Just be the bank. That's it.
That's it.
That makes so much sense to me. That plays to my strengths of not doing anything and just lending money, right? Like, I want to be the lazy guy. Is that a crime? I don't think that's a crime. I just need to be smart. And so going to justbethebank.com gives me the resources, the tools, the calculators, I suppose, that I need to really understand how to make all of that work. So,
Bobby, it doesn't make you a bad person, not wanting to work. In fact, we have t-shirts that say, it beats working.
Man, okay, I need a t-shirt. I like that. Dave, thanks so much for the time. This has been really insightful and really eye-opening from just even a data perspective. The fact that not a lot of people do the research and they invest in a piece of real estate or they invest in a stock just because they heard about the fact that this sector is hot or this sector or this stock is doing well. One thing that I admire about what you've done is the thorough due diligence to create those three verticals that you're so good at. And you just go all in on those verticals and you go all in on that strategy. So congratulations to all of that success for you and your family, but also for coming on and sharing some of your thoughts on how our viewers can also get there, because it's not an overnight thing, right? It's not you're gonna be a multimillionaire and by tomorrow at 4 o'clock or in between the commercials on HGTV. It really takes time, it takes effort, it takes mentors, it takes understanding data. And if you're not willing to do that, then frankly, if you're watching this, walk away and try again next year. But if you really want that edge, then it's a daily effort. And you know what? You're going to make mistakes some days, and some days it's going to feel like crap, but keep the eye on the prize. And to summarize, it's possible. And you're looking at it.
It is. And I would tell you to tell your listeners as well, everything that you said plus, you don't have to know everything. Because one of the things I realized is I don't know everything, but I know everything I need to know right now to do incredibly well in the market, because I know other people who know what I don't. And that's where Think Realty comes in. It's where Eddie comes in and Avi, you come in, because you've helped people get to where they're trying to go quicker, because you've forgotten more about what they need than they'll probably ever know. So if you're not going to know everything, partner with other people who do. And that's where you and Eddie and Think come in.
Bingo. Dave, thanks so much for the time. I appreciate it. We'll have to have you back on in a couple of months to get your perspective on the market for where 2021 is and see how your predictions have been holding up, which undoubtedly, I'm sure, they wouldn't have changed.
So I hope so.
Thanks again. www.justbethebank.com. Dave, again, thanks a lot. We'll see you soon.
Oh, and to you, Abby.
Thanks. Think Realty Nation, our next segment is brought to you by Marco Santarelli and Narada Real Estate Investments, your premier source for cash flow investment property. Check them out by visiting www.naradarealestate.com. Let's talk about 3D printing tech, it's an article written by Steve Streetman on thinkrealty.com. You know, one of the things that I've been having conversations with a lot of people, lenders and brokers and hard money lenders and flippers and builders all across the country over the last couple of weeks, is the fact that the cost of labor and the cost of materials is skyrocketing. So this article is quite curious. 3D printing tech. Can you build a house? Can you print a house? Frankly, yes. And if you're not paying attention to the 3D printing space in the home on the home building side, I think you might be missing out. And also, one of my really good friends, Aaron Norris, has been paying attention to this particular trend, and you can reach out to him as well. Every time we talk, he always talks about the 3D home printing space and how it's going to absolutely change the game in the next 5 to 10 years. Quote, this article, quote, the greatly reduced time and cost to build a home are the most touted advantages for 3D printed homes. Some companies are advertising that they can build a home for $10,000 and trying to get that price down to $4,000. Can you Can you just think about that for a second, what your margins would be? Yeah, okay, it's not going to be as crazy as lumber and et cetera, but it's a very interesting thought to consider. So maybe you rumble about that over the next, like, let that marinate, like maybe a year and a half or a week and a half, and just think through where this can play an advantage into your overall investing strategy. Printed homes are more stable and can be better insulated than typical homes. Quote, using materials like extruded hempcrete, spell check, synthetic stone may also provide better sound insulation within the home. And there is much less construction waste when a house is 3D printed. Overall, 3D printed homes are more efficient in time, require less labor, and are more efficient for energy, and waste less material. So I'm interested to see what California is going to do with this, because you know California is generally a leading indicator of what's going to happen with homes across the country, and of course the market across the country. And if California starts to really push this, then maybe something to consider. Let us know your thoughts by visiting thinkrealty.com. Yeah, you can hit me up online as well on LinkedIn at Abhi Golhar, and frankly anywhere else online. Huge shout out to Think Realty and the conference and expo, the hybrid conference and expo. It's such a hard thing to say, conference and expo. Say that five times over. In Houston, coming this March 26th and 27th, set your sights on making 2021 a success with more knowledge and know-how by learning and networking with top-tier real estate investing pros. For a limited time, receive a buy one, get one deal on both live and virtual tickets. Register for two tickets and enter the code podcast at checkout to receive this buy one, get one deal. You can do so by visiting thinkrealty.com/Houston. That's it for the show. I hope you learned a lot. Dave has done a lot. And if you need to like skip back 10 minutes and listen to what he said, just do that over and over and over and over and over again until it emboldens into your brain and that you really, really feel what he is saying from an investing perspective. His family's done a lot. And if you haven't paid attention to LendingHome.com's success over the last couple of years, you should. Okay, gotta run. See you next time.